You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Let's have a look at the state of the world's markets with Joanne Bainham from Miton Optimal. Joanne, last night I sort of dozed off a little bit, I think, or was watching something else. And then when I turned on my screen, my Bloomberg screen, I noticed that the S&P had suddenly jumped by about 45, 50 points because of a tweet from Donald Trump. And I thought to myself, do you know, is this right? Is it right that social media and the President of the United States, combined with social media, is influencing the world's markets to such an extent that billions and billions are being made and lost at the stroke of a button, if you see what I mean. And now this morning I see that the markets have reversed. I'm actually quite confused after many, many years in the market.
Yeah, I suppose it talks to the whole story about noise, doesn't it? I mean, you and I both know there's noise in the markets and one should ignore them and look at the bigger picture. I think what people are struggling with at the moment is, what is the bigger picture and how does Trump influence that bigger picture for a long time? Because you're right, it's utterly ridiculous that Trump can come up with a tweet and half an hour later the markets move up by 1.5%. You know, that's not investing, that's gambling. I think by far the most interesting thing that's happened in the last couple of days is the fact that the US yield curve has inverted. It inverted this morning. I don't know if you saw the numbers.
Yes.
But what yield curve inversion means is that the 10-year, 2-year spread is now negative. So you're paid less money to lend money for 10 years than you are for 2 years, which is against modern theory. And it tells us that there are recession warnings starting to come through. So I think, you know, Trump is noise. Who knows what he'll say next week? But who knows what the Chinese will say next week? It is very difficult running money in this kind of environment, and particularly in an environment where interest rates globally are so unbelievably low. For me, the biggest question we should be asking ourselves at the moment, and it's something I'm grappling with and we all are, is, is our lower interest rates panacea for equity markets? Is that good enough? Or are lower interest rates telling us that global growth is so slow that equity earnings and we should be concerned about them and that equities aren't underplayed by this? So I think that's the thing that people are struggling with. Is it good for equities or bad for equities? And I think the jury's still out on that one at the moment.
The inverted yield curve was something that we spoke about many, many months ago on several occasions with yourself and other commentators. Do you think that this time the reinversion, if you can say that, the reinvention of the reinversion is the real thing this time? Because other people in the past said, well, this means that there's going to be a recession in 18 months to 2 years. And then everybody else said, no, it's not always the case. Suddenly going back to that theme means that perhaps this is the real thing.
Look, I think it's debatable whether it's causing a recession because global bond markets are not probably accurately priced because of central banks. That's part of the argument why people say yield curve inversion is not that important. But what I do think it's telling the market is that growth globally is slowing, and slowing growth is not good news. So whether it means a recession or not, I think the jury's still out, but I do think it means growth is slowing. And I think that's what the yield curves everywhere are telling you. And I think that's a warning sign to equity markets. I think you need to be concerned. You know, one of the things we haven't talked about is this: what's happening in China at the moment. I mean, in Hong Kong, I'm sorry.
Yes.
What does that mean for global politics? I think it's really interesting.
It's huge.
Does China squash what's happening in Hong Kong to say to the rest of China, look, you can't uprise against us? Or does it try and keep quiet? I think that's also playing out in the minds of investors currently. But I think the bigger worry here is what's going to happen to U.S. earnings or global earnings. In a falling global growth environment, I think we came out with German data this morning, correct me if I'm wrong, I think German GDP data was negative 0.1%.
It was.
And I saw some, which is their business confidence numbers out of Germany yesterday, which were also absolutely awful. So Germany is also struggling in this global tariff war environment. So I think people are worried about earnings. And then you have this ridiculous situation in bond markets where yields keep falling. I mean, I was thinking about it today. Is it possible the 10-year actually goes negative in the U.S.? I mean, did anyone ever think German Bundesgut would go negative? And they have. Does the Fed eventually have negative interest rates? Is that where we're going? And what does that mean for the global economy? So there's some very big picture stuff we need to worry about right now. And on top of that, you had inflation numbers out of the States yesterday that were slightly higher than expectations. Remember, this whole story works perfectly if there's no inflation. Inflation starts picking up in the system. Central banks, it's more difficult for them to cut rates. So it's a very precarious environment at the moment. And then on top of that, you've got China and the US at loggerheads over tariffs. And nothing I'm reading tells me they're going to come up with a solution anytime soon. Because ultimately, this is down to intellectual property disputes. And the Americans don't want the Chinese becoming all-powerful in technology. And I don't know how they solve this problem.
I find it very disturbing that the United States president comes out and says, we're going to delay tariffs until December the 15th on iPhones and toys. That tells you something about the state of his mind and also the state of the US economy. The market rallies 1.5% on toys and iPhones. It's actually pathetic, Joanne.
Yeah. It's completely pathetic. I think what it is telling you that the Chinese appear to have the upper hand in negotiations, because it does look like Trump is somewhat folded on his tariff talk. You know, it's helping the US out before the Christmas season, which is also what he's told the public is, by the way, tariffs are inflationary, which he long claimed it wasn't. And he's also claimed that it won't hurt the US consumer. Well, then why do it before Christmas if it doesn't want to hurt the U.S. consumer? He knows it's going to hurt the U.S. consumer. But you're right. Toys, I think also, Apple makes so much money for America, they don't want to kill the goose who lays the golden egg. So they're starting to realize that the world is terribly interconnected. Supply chains, a lot of supply chains sit in China. Be very careful about putting tariffs on goods that you sell in America that American companies make money out of. So this thing is very connected. But it's not over. That's what I'm saying. I think that's what the markets had a relief rally yesterday, and then they've woken up this morning going, what does it all really mean? Back to your words, it's pathetic.
It is pathetic.
I think what's really upset the markets this morning is the Chinese data that came out. I can't remember if it was industrial production numbers or which data points this morning, or retail sales, both of which disappointed. The world needs China to be growing, and without China growing, people are going to get very, very nervous indeed. So I think that's also partly why you've seen the rally that we saw yesterday sort of reversing today. And that's also why you're seeing bond yield curves everywhere falling, and why you've got inversion now on sort of 10-year, 2-year spreads. It's not just a US phenomenon, by the way. From what I'm reading, it's also happened in the UK today as well. So this is a global issue. Interest rates are falling because I know central banks have to keep cutting rates. And as I said earlier, is this good for equity markets or bad for equity markets? What's the message we're getting?
Well, the message we're getting is that it was good for equity markets a while ago, but now it's been revisited. I don't think it is very good for equity markets. And what I saw last night when I woke up from my slumber to see the S&P suddenly up 50 points or whatever it was, I said to myself, this is a short covering rally. This is not new buyers. And we've seen that this morning, because as I look at my screen as we record this podcast, Joanne, the S&P is now down 28. So it's recovered, or rather the bears have recovered, around about 55 to 60% of what they lost last night. So this is volatile. And when I remember when I was a callow, youthful trader, if you can remember those days, in London, my ex-boss, a chap by the name of Steve Barber, says, Lindsay, when there's volatility at a very elevated level in the market or a very depressed state of the market, when there's volatility in either of those areas, then you know there's a trend change coming. And the volatility to be up 50 and then this morning down, S&P now down 29, something is afoot. And I think something is afoot this time.
No, I think you're right. The one part of the market that we haven't seen volatility rising in yet is in currency markets. So we're seeing volatility in bond markets move up. We're seeing volatility in equity markets move up. We haven't seen the currency markets yet. And I think that's the next leg to fall. So if that happens, then I think there'll be even more risk off. The problem is we've become so used to what I refer to as TINA markets. Mm. There is no alternative to equities. And so every time the markets fall, people come in and buy some more. As I said to you, I think the big conundrum right now is what's going to happen to US earnings or global earnings. I don't know if you're following European banking stocks are looking particularly weak at the moment. Emerging market currencies are starting to weaken against the dollar. These are all sort of risk-off indicators that are telling us something's not quite right in the world. But equally, the problem is, if you're trying to retire one day, you cannot possibly retire on a negative-yielding bond. So you're forced to find other alternative assets to invest in. So you've got that underpin to equity markets, but if those equity markets don't have good earnings, then that underpin is in trouble. So right now, I think we need some clarity on trade wars. Just a one-liner tweet from Trump isn't going to do it anymore. I think that's what we're seeing. Look, if we see the yuan strengthen a lot more, in other words, go back under 7, that might look like the Chinese are ready to, you know, come to the party. We also need the Chinese to increase the liquidity from their central bank, which as to date, they still haven't seemed to be doing, because if you look at the economic data out of China, it's still slowing. And we need the Europeans to do something. Look at the Germans. It's ridiculous. They have huge budget surpluses. They could start spending their way rich in Germany, and they refuse to do so. The German economy is slowing. They need to start spending money. So there are things people can do. I think you and I have talked about people's QE before. But I do think that's the next level we go to. And that could be ultimately very bullish for stock markets in the short term. We start seeing, you know, central banks really throw money at the problem. I mean, they're even talking about potentially central banks buying equities. Well, if that happens, you'll have a huge underpin to the equity market. So it's not all fall down yet, but risk levels are definitely elevating. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, next week, as you rightfully point out, next week we could have a tweet coming out of Trump and he could say, you know, all tariffs have gone away. We had a great phone call with China and they've all gone away. So we are living in difficult times right now. I think the things we have to keep our eye on is yield curves. Look at interest rates, what they're telling you, because back to your point about last night, you had a very strong rally in equity markets, but the bond markets didn't move much. So the bond markets didn't believe it. And apparently they're always the clever boys in the room, right?
That's what they say.
The bond guys, they know what that's what they say. And the bond guys are nervous. They don't like what they're seeing.
Headline on CNBC.com, as I read their screen, it says China accuses Pelosi and McConnell of inciting chaos in Hong Kong. This is another sort of insidious way of undermining the United States democratic process. China fixes its daily yuan midpoint at 703.12, let's call it 703.12, stronger than expected. China's July industrial output rose 4.8%, the slowest in 17 years. So what it tells me is that a major US-based financial website is China, China, China. And if you're messing around with China, as Mr. Trump is, then that causes chaos. And I'm sorry, I can't help but think that there is chaos coming, even more than normal.
I agree with you, and I think it's going to become more difficult. The thing to note, though, as well, in terms of the Chinese, the way they look at things, they have 100-year plans. They're not into the next electoral cycle. So China will take the pain if the long-term gain is worth it. And I think Trump doesn't know who he's debating with. That's my feeling at the moment. I would certainly rather back the Chinese and the Americans right now. But the Chinese economy is slowing, so they do need the Americans. This whole thing is very fractious. And let's hope somebody wakes up and realizes this soon. But right now, Trump doesn't appear to be leading very well, but then that's an obvious statement. Who knows? Another thing that's got my attention lately is Elizabeth Warren and her comments on technology companies in the US. I don't know if you've seen sort of a groundswell of support to sort of break up these big tech companies. A lot of the Democrats are trying to use it as part of the electoral chatter. And I think that's also quite a large risk for markets that no one's really talking about, because the only thing that's led the US market higher for the last couple of years really has been the FANG stocks. It's been the big technology companies. Obviously, there are a lot more stocks, but those have really driven the earnings. And I think that's a big worry for markets, because what we have seen, and this is a very big picture story, what we have seen with central banks keeping interest rates so low, monetary policy has made capitalism the big enemy of the world. And we are globally seeing a rise of socialism. And those are very, very big picture stuff, but that also worries me about what that means for the long run story for equity markets. But right now, as we sit here today, the bond markets are telling you they're getting more and more nervous. I must just point out for anyone listening to this call that just because the yield curve inverts doesn't mean the equity markets are necessarily in a crash now. It takes about 9 months to 12 months. You can still be long equity markets and then sell much later. It tends to be quite a long lead from the time the yield curve inverts.
But the first inversion was 6 to 9 months ago, wasn't it, Joanne?
Not in the 10-year tier. It was in the 10-year 3-month or something. It was another data point, or 2-year 3-month. It was another data point that inverted. This is, from my understanding, it's the first time the 10-year 2-year has inverted. It's been holding on for 10, 15 basis points. I could be wrong here, but I think this is the first time the 10-year, 2 years inverted, but maybe I'm wrong.
South Africa is something we need to comment upon, even though this was meant to be an argument or a discussion rather about the international markets, but the international markets are inextricably linked with the local markets. I'm looking at my screen now, and the all-share index of the JSE, despite a massive rally on Wall Street last month, the all-share is down 1 2/3%. You were talking about China having a long-term plan, and that's because they are a one-party state. South Africa, I don't care what anyone says, is a one-party state. The EFF and the DA can make noises and dance around as much as they like, but the ANC is in power and will be in power for another generation. Why don't we employ a long-term party state and say it does a long-term party policy, rather? They've got the ability to do so and say, it doesn't matter, we're going to sack 10,000 people from Eskom, we're going to put in this long-term growth plan, but they don't, of course. And I'm looking at South African stocks like Sasol. Can you imagine Sasol now down 4.2% at 281 rand per share, with the rand doing what it's doing, when the oil price relatively high? There's an extraordinary story emerging from the JSE, and it has been emerging for two or maybe even longer, 3 years. Massive, massive moves to the downside. It's a terrible situation in our country.
And it is a terrible situation, because you expect the likes of Sasol to have rallied with a stronger oil price and a weaker rand. The problem with Sasol, for instance, as I'm sure you're well aware, is their capital projects in the US have been utterly disastrous. So I think that's partly their own goal, and partly people have said we've had enough. But you know, the likes of other companies like Richmond, Naspers, et cetera, still aren't giving you the kind of the gains that you have become used to in the past. I mean, I haven't looked at Tencent's and Naspers' results, but apparently Naspers disappointed somewhat. And the bigger picture here is SA economy, or SA domestic facing stocks, are in big trouble because the local economy has no growth. So back to your point about a sort of a Chinese model where they grow the economy, we've got an ANC that you say should be in power and should be doing things. They're so busy fighting with each other within the ANC, they can't make any correct decisions. I mean, let's take this thing with Cyril Ramaphosa at the moment, the public protector, and trying to announce who's given him money to lead his campaign. We've got bigger picture stuff to worry about at the moment than who gave him campaign money. You know, we haven't even dealt with Zuma and all the awful things he's done. So this country needs growth, and it needs growth desperately. And you're right. We need, I mean, I don't know if you've been reading, but the story about, you know, the IMF, we'd have to call the IMF, I think, was it Rupert said, well, within a year, the IMF will be here.
Yes.
And having listened to a few economists now, I think IMF coming to South Africa would be the best thing that ever happens to us. Now, that might, people listening might go, has she lost her mind? But the reality is, an IMF comes in and says to government, you have to cut your government workforce. Well, that's what we desperately need in this country. We've got bloated SOEs. We need them to cut the workforce so that private enterprise can do what they need to do. But, you know, we've got a situation. I mean, let's just talk about South Africa. The thing that scares me more than anything else right now in this country, and I think it's terrifying, actually, is this NHI story. I don't know if you've been following the NHI bill. But we are going to have mass emigration in this country if that comes to fruition. If the government today cannot run Eskom, cannot run SA Airways, cannot run SABC, in a country where a tiny number of people pay the taxes and therefore you have a proper national health scheme, it's going to be another tax on consumers. Doctors will leave en masse if they're not paid properly.
Yes.
We are going to have proper problems in South Africa. So I'm hoping sanity prevails at some point. But I think that is another factor that's really influencing how South Africans think today.
Just on the IMF story, Joanne, I spoke to Chris Hart, who's an independent economic advisor and analyst these days. He talked to me about this many, many years ago. He said at some stage the South African government will have to go to the IMF with a begging bowl. And he said it's getting closer and closer. And if we do go to the IMF, then the rand will halve and then halve again. They were his words, halve and then halve again, because of the onerous terms of the loan that we will get, which will be obviously many, many billions to bail out Eskom and South African Airways and the stupid SABC, etc. So you say the IMF would be the best thing. In the short term, the pain will be awful. The pain will be almost unbearable.
All right. So firstly, if the IMF were to come tomorrow, we're not at the moment. We don't need to ask the IMF for help yet. I think one of the things you have to realize, most of our debt is local currency debt. It's not dollar debt. So in the case of what we saw this week in Argentina with the landscape there, with the Argentina peso losing 48% or something ridiculous in one day and the markets collapsing, they have an enormous amount of dollar debt they have to service, and they're not able to do so. In the South African context, we don't have much dollar debt. We have quite a lot of local debt. So what we have is a growth problem. What we have is a bloated civil service in this country. So in a situation where the IMF comes in and says, let's cut those expenditure and get the country on a proper growth trajectory, yes, there's short-term pain, but long-term gain. In the case where we go to the IMF, where we start building up dollar debt, in the case we go to them because our debt levels are much higher now, we're forced to ask them for help, then I think Chris Hart's completely right. It'll be an absolute disaster. It's about when we ask them for the help. The reality is the ANC will never ask the IMF for help. They don't need to at the moment. They will never ask them for help because they know what it entails. Kasatu will never let it happen. Hey. We'll only go to the IMF when we're absolutely desperate, and then Chris Hart is right. It'll be the worst thing for this country. If we do it at the right time, we get Cyril Ramaphosa possibly wants to cut the civil service in this country, but he can't from a political perspective. I think the word we use in markets today, he doesn't have the political will. The reality is his ANC isn't strong enough to listen to what he's telling them. So he won't do it.
In other words, he's just like the previous leaders, and I include Mandela in this statement, They are political puppets to the masses. And unfortunately, South Africa is a disunited country. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, look, I think it's true.
Lindsay,
Pravin Gordhan keeps making comments that watch this space, something will happen. Cyril's been saying watch this space for a long time. You know, there's still hope. There's always hope. Maybe we get some proper, you know, people going to jail in this country. That would be fantastic news. That means the government's actually serious about putting corruption away. That will be brilliant news. That there's lots we can do to help this country. All I'm saying is scaremongering on the IMF today is not the worst thing that happened to us. The worst thing that happened to us is we don't cut the debt levels. We can't get to a situation where we're forced to ask for help, and that would be an utter disaster.
How are you allocating your funds? Now, before you go on, because we have to curtail this interview now.
Yes.
How are you allocating your funds at Myton Optimal? You're an asset allocator. Where are you allocating your funds?
Okay, so about 2 weeks ago, we took risk off the table. We wholesale sold risk, be it across the bond markets, equity markets, and from a risk rating perspective, we have long-term forecasts for our asset classes. We've taken risk all the way down to sort of 3 or 4 out of 10, just from an ideology perspective. We have been buying gold. We've even been buying US treasuries, which sound utterly ridiculous given how low yields are, but it's more of a risk diversifier, not because we think it's a fantastic returning asset class. We've taken risk off. We are dying to buy back in. We're just trying to find a catalyst to do so because ultimately, you know, equity markets are cheap, so you don't want to be out of them for too long. But right now, the risks are mounting. Yield curves are inverting. You need to pay attention to it. So we're not rushing back into the market, but we want to. We're keeping the powder dry. And we do like gold, as I think we discussed with you a few times in these calls.
Yes, indeed. The gold's been the best performing asset, even though it doesn't yield anything for the last, probably around about the last 3 to 4 months. Joanne, thank you so much for your time. Great insight, great chat. Joanne Bainham is from Myton Optimal in Cape Town. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.